Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The VM Team.
QNL.
With guest co-hosts.
Obsolete.
Over.
I wasn't saying you were obsolete. It was Lisa, pause, then obsolete.
I do hate my name sometimes.
It opens up a lot of bad jokes, but nonetheless, it's still pretty unique. I like it.
Yeah, but people keep mentioning my name when they're not talking to me, which really causes a problem when I'm scanning text.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
This is episode 99. With us we have Daniel Quick.
Last of the double-digit episodes. Woo!
Lisa Bang.
I am the biggest, baddest unit in Civ.
Makalua.
No, 100% more delinquent, thanks to MLS, Phil, and StarCraft 2.
Obsolete.
Hello.
And Philip Ballou.
All actions per minute, no strategy.
No skill, I just...
And I am Sal, also known as Thorburn.
You know, I still remember digital rights management efforts. The original Sim City, you know, people played that. It came with a 8.5 by 11 sheet.
Red.
Yeah, the red. You had to insert those codes.
Pain in the butt.
Manual was like, "Do not lose this sheet." And yeah, before the days of no internet access.
Some games would like ask you what's like the third word on the second paragraph on page 52 of the manual.
Yeah,
the old Dungeons and Dragon games.
Actually, did the original Civ do that?
Yes, it had pictures for the technologies, and they were on different pages, like in the bottom corner of the page, and you had to tell them on what page you saw it.
I suddenly remember that. Yeah.
We chatted about Civ 4 pro tips and Senate.
In forum talk, we discussed no tech trading as of Civilization 5 and its implications.
And in the news, all about Civilization 5 from cities to strategic resources.
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
Strategy tips. I wouldn't say they're top five, but I randomly put together issues after scanning the forum. Issue number one, I'll just say this. Get a mod. Reason being is the default GUI leaves a lot to be desired, and that is kind of putting it lightly. You don't want to be constantly checking which AI has his hands full every single turn. If you have the bug mod, for example, you have better stack organization, you can track projects, it just saves so much freaking time. There is no need not to have bug mod.
I particularly like the bug mod myself.
I agree with you there.
Don't mean to give all these extra free plugs, but, I mean, it's free. There really should be no excuse for not having it.
Well, I have two problems with bug mod. One of them is when you go multiplayer, it's hard to talk everyone else into either getting it or using it, or more so getting it. And so frequently it's not available for multiplayer. But also the time between turns just frustrates me. But I still do use it. It's built in with Buffy, which is the Hall of Fame mod. It really has a lot of functionality that if you're trying to play your best, definitely.
Same thing here. I don't use it for online games, but I don't have a problem where it actually slows down the game for me. It just helps speed things through much faster. Can probably get maybe three extra games in just by running this because it just saves so much clicking and checking all the time. Any decent mod, just I don't see why people still at this point wouldn't run it or a similar mod because it's free, it's been around for ages. Anyways, I'll move on to something else. Next tip, don't waste marble. Maybe it's just my opinion, but I would have to say marble probably is the most important resource in the entire game.
More than horses and iron? Wow.
Yeah. I can see X-Rushers will say, oh no, copper has to be the best. Every Praetorian fan is going to say iron is the best. But as soon as you say marble, every decent player right away thinks the Great Library. National Epic also is sped up by marble. Hero Epic. The Oracle. Now, that's a tough one because usually you won't get marble hooked up in time You still can if you settle on it right from the start. Parthenon is important, I think we can all agree. Temple of Artemis, I can understand that most people don't see much in that, that's fine. Touch, I think that's pretty important. I mean, chances are, if you get the Great Library, you're probably going to get the Taj Mahal, usually. I think there's that one calendar one or two, the one that doubles Golden Ages.
Mausoleum.
Yeah. All those wonders make them pretty early, and that is doubled by marble. You see how it has to be the most important resource in the game. Marble just lets you slingshot to rifling or anywhere near there, and such a huge discount. I can see how if you're Darius and you start horses and you're Fat Cross, but right away you're relying on luck right there. I can't see any other argument. Now, if you would have asked me 3 or 4 years ago what is the best resource, I probably would have said stone. I've changed my mind now. The game has changed a bit, and usually you're going to have to get into a war at some point, unless you're going for the AP cheese or culture.
Well, for those who aren't as clear on the game mechanics, understand why it is that you can vault towards the rifling so quickly using marble. The great person points.
You can double bulb education, you can bulb philosophy, and you can bulb...
Liberalism itself, as long as you don't have machinery.
Yeah, usually I won't bulb paper because I feel it's a waste. Paper is kind of cheap. But still, even if you don't want to bulb, you can still get your academies going up. And it's not so much... Also, what you gain, but what you lose. If you don't build the Great Library, and Gandhi does, that's bad. Because he's Philo, and he already texts fast enough as it is. So now you've made your situation far worse. If you let someone like him get the library.
That could have changed lib times for the AI by, like, 30-plus turns. I've seen it. Games where someone gets it versus not. One, like, AI gets it at 800 AD, and then the game where the human got the Great Library, it was, like, 1100 AD, it could have gone still. It's crazy.
Yeah. There is so much synergy, too. Like, with the National Epic, the Great Library, both require marble, and both boost each other. That's huge. I just cannot see how there's any other resource more important than marble. Because look at all the stuff you can get with it very early.
You have a question, how you use it to vault to rifling post-liberalism. It's very easy for me to hang extremely early liberalism times if I really want to do that. But coming up with the enough raw beakers to keep moving after liberalism seems a little bit harder.
Well,
yeah, you try to work the trades with the AI, but then by the time you do that, it's hard to get enough rifles to start a war with them. So you really have to get out in front a little bit, and I struggle there.
The nice thing about rifling is the drafting, right? One pop gets you one rifle. There is not a better exchange rate anywhere.
Yeah, still don't want to have only, like, 10 turns or 20 turns before they get to rifles. When they get to rifles, they all just appear. And that's nasty.
But you can also bulb... Oh, jeez. Can't remember. I got to have the tech list in front of me.
I know you can get printing presses.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking about.
But yeah, as soon as you have, well, machinery and education, you'll pretty much be bulbing printing press. And that is on the path, but you're probably going to have to back trade banking and self-tech replaceable parts and rifling itself.
I do admit I don't usually go after cannons or steel. I really don't like going up that line. Some people do. I'd rather pour more beakers into military tradition. I'm not going to say my way is better. I mean, if you want to go cannons, that's fine, but I always prefer going military tradition and rifling.
So military, tradition, and rifling, so are you thinking you got mounted units then?
Yep, I love cavalry.
Okay.
I guess we'll move to the next one.
Well, I gotta say, if I got one of those choking humans next to me, I might still want the medal, but that's just a little bit case-dependent.
Yeah, I can't argue. The next tip is this. Don't overvalue commerce. I would say a rule of thumb I always use is... one hammer equals about 3 commerce. So just because you see a few coins, don't get too excited. I've noticed on the forum, a lot of people, if they have a choice between a gold and a big fat cross and some huge, heavy food resource like pigs, they'll generally take the gold. I'll take the pigs every time. I'm not a fan of gold because food and hammers is the most important thing in the game. And early on, the first thing you want to do is grow your capital. You need to get your workers out, your settlers, and so on. Who cares about the extra commerce? So what if you get a few techs earlier? It doesn't make sense, a trade-off to me.
You want to set up long-term viability.
Well, if you can grow your capital quicker, you can get everything out quicker, you can get more settlers out quicker, then you can go and grab some other gold somewhere else. Anytime you're working a gold tile in your capital, usually it's almost always a food negative tile. You're burning off food. Much rather have something like gems where I'm not subtracting food, because you want to be constantly whipping and growing and just getting stuff out. There's a bit of an exception there, because gold at least will double the building speed of one of the world wonders. So you can argue that a little bit, but generally I'd much rather have production over commerce anytime, any day.
The Hall of Fame players always roll gems over gold.
I'm not too surprised.
That is because it's food neutral. It's just painful at the gold rolling. Now, I still like having it as long as I have food to work it. It's a happy cat boost. It's not harmful too much if you grow first. But this is something that even the AI tries to get right. Like, it values food more highly than commerce. And the reasoning for that should be obvious, just because of the...
No maintenance.
Yeah. But that's true. I see that, too, all the time on the forum. Even now, people will try to either research mining first to get that going, or they'll work it before they start working their pig. I don't know why, because they'll never crow if they're working a gold mine, because they're usually plains.
Generally, if I just have one gold somewhere, that's fine. It's nice to have one just to get the happy and to speed up the Espeya wander.
I agree with you. You want to prioritize your food over those shinies.
As much as Dan loves the shinies.
Yes, they'll still be there. And you want to be able to actually work them and, as you said, still be growing at the same time, so.
More people equals more money in the long run.
Yeah. The next issue, beware of what's pillage. Most people probably think I'm talking about cottages here, that maybe pillage cottages too much when you're capturing territory. Mostly what I had in mind was strategic resources and actually resources in general. If you're rushing someone early and they have marble hooked up, is it really that smart to pillage their marble? Because if they are just about to complete something like the Parthenon for you, why risk losing that? If you pillage their marble and end up capturing their city and had that actually allowed them to build you the Parthenon, that is a huge waste that you've just run into.
You're not wrong. I would add horses to that list if you're rushing. Assuming you're not using axes. If you're using anything other than axes, the AI might still build chariots in an attempt to quote-unquote defend. So that's another one you want to consider not pillaging.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues, and I actually was going to get to the Russian issue, and I've seen this before in the forum where people are attacking with cavalry from Russia, so you got your Cossacks, right? And the first thing they do is they pillage the horses from the AI. That's pretty dead bad, because your unique unit has a bonus against mounted units, so why are you pillaging the horses from your opponent? It's to your advantage that he spams knights, cuirassiers, cavalry. But pillaging his horses, you're now forcing him to play optimal. That's bad. The AI wants to play, like, unoptimal, let him do it all day.
It is kind of sad that the AI will build cavalry against Cossacks, though.
They do. They do.
I'd be more likely to be pillaging their food resources.
Yeah, that I understand, especially since the AI is a lot smarter now and whips like mad. One other issue I want to mention is early hero epic. I would really like to get a hero epic as early as possible. Usually, as you go up the levels, you'll see people will tend to delay early wars, and usually their first war will happen shortly after liberalism, unless you're doing like some early axe rush or so, which becomes rare as you move up. Usually when people get a hero epic, it's through warring, but you can still get a hero epic through barb farming, but I'll see people go overboard with fog busting. You'll have a warrior at 8 experience, and instead of trying to get 2 more points on it to unlock the hero epic, they'll sit there in the fog bust every tile, so they have like no chance in hell of ever getting that. You think about it, the hero epic, that's 100% boost to military production. That is yet another tremendous waste. You're throwing out the window. There's no need for that.
I'm so guilty of that mistake sometimes, and I agree, it's a mistake.
You're taking your number one military city, and you can almost double that, like you get a free city without paying extra city maintenance, and they're just throwing it out the window. Now, sometimes you have no choice. Like, if you're playing deity, all the land will disappear real quick.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe you can use a trireme, because, as you know, the barb galleys just multiply like crazy now. One thing I will do sometimes, especially if I'm protective, if I have someone like Montezuna or Shaka, who I know is always going to be running behind everyone in tech, I will found a useless city right on a hill near them just to declare war and have them suicide, just to get my level 3 or 4 unit, just to get the Hero Epic unlocked. Now, even if you have bad luck, and all your units who are going to reach that 10 experience point level die, you'll at least get that great general somewhere, make a super medic, and you can still unlock the Hero Epic. That is important. Especially the smaller empire you have, the more important that becomes. Because you don't have that many cities to whip and draft and everything else. The earlier you get that military city, the earlier you can just pump out chariots, cats, whatever you want, while your other cities can just focus on everything else until you get up to, like, post-liberalism, and then you just do your mass upgrades and just plow in. The last thing I want to say is never underestimate the stupidity of an AI. That applies to basically everything in the game, but in particular, what I want to get at is militaristically, I think people give up too early on the lower levels when an AI blows the horn and attacks you. Too many people give up. The longer you stall around, the AI has a greater chance of making a blunder, and it makes terrible blunders all over the place. For example, sometimes it'll, like, move up to your capital, and you think, there's no way I can get my units to the capital in time. You only have, like, one warrior in there, and it's got, like, 10 knights in front of it. But we've all seen where the AI just decides to waste 5 turns bombarding your wall down, even though you only have one unit defending in it. It'll move its siege in front of you. And sometimes it'll use its siege defensively, not even use it to attack properly. There's so many exploits. Even when you're going on the offensive, sometimes you'll find out at the last moment you're just ready to attack a city, and all of a sudden he upgrades every unit to a longbow, and you're screwed because there's one too many longbows. Usually there's something you can do. Throw a worker in front of it, let him move his longbows out to snipe the worker, then you, like, go in the city. I'm happy to trade a worker for a city anytime. Another reason I love cavalry so much, if you place your cavalry so it can hit 2 or more cities simultaneously, the AI simply does not know how to counter that. It just falls apart. It just makes things so much easier.
For what it's worth, humans have trouble with that, too.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But in particular, the AI is just, I don't even know how to describe it.
Atrocious?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's as good as the person who coded it, right? Maybe not the best tips, but like I said, reading the forum, I've seen where this stuff could have value to quite a few people.
Yeah, and actually taking it from the perspective of common mistakes, that's another way to go about it, because then you're focusing on what people are doing that they shouldn't be doing. I mean, you were recommending what they should be doing instead.
Yeah, and I know some people may argue with me on some points. Well, nothing changes, that's how it always will be. I would have to say my biggest mistake I probably do, I don't micromanage enough because I get too lazy. Another mistake I do all the time is I'll declare war without checking to see if that AI has made a defense pact that turn. That's where I usually screw myself.
Well, since we're on the topic of our own common mistakes, I'll say managing my great people is my biggest mistake, where I don't do that very well. Early on, not too bad, but as the game progresses, no, I fall short.
I think we all do that, because you have too many cities, and then it just feels too much drudgery.
I have trouble evaluating how to tech versus expand when there's a lot of land and there's one AI that's going to be grabby for that land. That's probably the number one time that I lose, even on Deity, but I was more so on Immortal. If I'm going to lose, that's almost always why. It's not an early declaration from a warmonger. It's some 30% land AI. And I'm not sure whether I should it in tech, like Zara or Gilgamesh or Justinian. So, you know, somebody like that who just gets a ton of land because one of the other AIs starts spamming missionaries.
Yeah.
Do I try to compete with that and slow myself down, leave myself a little bit exposed to war, and not be able to attack people until later? Or do I stay with, like, the 6-8 city range, then just have a monster to deal with later on? It probably takes a peace vassal or two.
Yeah, that vassaling can really hurt, too.
Now, I play on lower difficulty level on Monarch, but I gotta say, I'm more likely that I'm going to expand and leave myself vulnerable militarily, because if I allow them to get to be massive civ, it just becomes a problem later on, because then the AI seems to be able to get vassals more easily than I'm able to. But I'd rather not have the vassals, just get rid of them, avoid the chance that they could then break away from you. It then often becomes that if that other civ gets so big, then they're likely going to be getting vassals. And then if I'm going after a smaller civ to try to compete with their size to either get back up or to try to get a little edge on it, at any point, the precarious relations or even the good relations I've had with the other big civ, all of a sudden, they're its vassal. And then it's like, okay, well, I won't worry about finishing off this person. I'll just worry about the master now. Except then it'll often find that, okay, I've exhausted. It's kind of a stalemate between myself and the big AI. Okay, maybe we can get peace. Oh, wait, there's the sleeping vassal that's been building their units for X number of turns that has moved their units through another civilization on the other end of my empire where none of my units are, and they have this stack that if only I could instantly transport my units from one end of my empire to the other, that would be fine. I think I'm better off trying to pick at the larger civs comparable to you, given that they're within a reasonable distance, and get them down to size, keep them in check, and then worry about some of the smaller ones later on, because if they stay small, then the likelihood that they're going to be a comparable threat to you is not as high.
It's hard, though. You play the highest two levels, especially the highest one. It's hard to keep up with AI's expansion. The map script gives them land. Because they'll go, like, 15 cities in the BCs, and there's just no way a human can do that.
Yeah. You still want to be able to do that, but it's not as easy. You're right.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot civ issues in the forums.
The topic is no tech trading. This topic was started by Aphoris, and she says, one of the new Civ 5 previews has announced that tech trading has been abolished. What do you guys think about it? Will the new cooperative research be good enough to replace it? And there was a poll attached, which I know Dan loves. About 34% of people said, yes, lack of tech trading is a bad thing. And 66% of people said, no, tech trading isn't an important feature.
Yeah, for those wondering what the new cooperative research be good enough to replace it, that's in Civ 5, the ability for two civilizations to create a joint research project, which gives a 15% bonus to the research output for both.
Yeah. Well, I guess we can talk about the current system and its flaws, which I guess Phil could elaborate on if you wanted to.
Oh, no tech trades for Civ 4?
Well, how the tech trading system is flawed right now. Like, as for myself, we're doing hemispheres or continents or something like that, and there's one landmass with a few civs that have been having, like, a big religious group hug, and they've been trading tech all around, then you'll often see it be the case that you'll be easily four or five techs ahead of you, and without you really having done anything except just have not that great of a trading partner or even isolated.
I go back and forth on it. I don't have any problem with the concept of tech trades as they are in Civ 4, but I feel like as far as game features go, they're not overemphasized in gameplay, but you're forced to overemphasize them. I feel they're too important relative to everything else in the game. Like, you have, say, Oxford 100% research multiplier, or Library, University, Observatory, another 75%, whatever. You get one tech trade for equal tech value, and you're basically getting 100% post-multiplier beakers on top of it. So tech trades become such a huge impact on your tech rate in general that it gets a little crazy. And yeah, the variability of starts creates some issues there as well. And so does the AI just passing them between each other as if they don't care about whether the trades are fair or not. I think part of the reason the AI needs as much bonuses as it's given in Civilization 4 is because the AI is so bad at logically trading its technologies, and then the humans are so much better than it that they can get a huge leg up there, and it becomes such a necessity to be able to do that well, to be good at the game at the high levels. I don't know if I'd want to see that completely gone. Like, I'm not sure I would be happy with a pure no-tech trade in every single game like Civ 4 no-tech trading has. It's an interesting change-up, though. It definitely affects your tech path hugely to have no-tech trades turned on versus off.
I like tech trading if I'm stuck in a war, for example, and I'm a hidden tech and I can end it with the tech. But otherwise, come on, you don't want to give away a city, so, you know, give them nationalism or something.
Or gold.
Yeah, or gold. Maybe it's just me, but I'm not that great with saving money, so usually I'll end up more often ahead in tech rather than gold. don't know if I had much of a problem with it philosophically, but yeah, I think I agree with Bill in that it is overemphasized, especially since it can be so powerful. You can be your multiplier times 3 or 4 if you do it right.
Yeah, one of the times that I've actually played multiplayer, and that was actually back with Civ 3, the game kind of got boring because it was me, one other guy, and then we had an AI, and we just ended up trading the tech, and before we knew it, we were like modern era, that maybe they'd barely in the 80s, if not then. Of course, we were so overpowered at the AI, it just got boring, so I just attacked him.
How did she actually phrase the poll kind of had me kind of go, well, wait a minute. Is the lack of tech trading a bad thing? And then it's yes and no, but it's not just yes and no. It's qualified. Yes, tech trading is an important feature of civilization in the real world. And then it's no, tech trading isn't an important feature. Well, I don't think the lack of tech trading is a bad thing, but I don't think that tech trading isn't an important feature. So what's going to be happening in Civilization 5, which was talked about, the joint research project, to me, now you're kind of getting into technology trading, not with the potential abuses that we've been talking about, kind of an absolute, but then it's also not the absolutely no tech trading that we get in Civ 4, which is like an on or off switch. I know, short of
permanent alliances, there's also a significant bonus from open borders and trade routes, however. Late game, people don't realize just what percentage of their GNP that is. But sure, it's definitely a difference from Civ 4.
I'm just thinking about what was mentioned earlier about the AI not understanding what's a good tech trade and what's not. Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. For example, what's that tech that founds Islam?
Divine Right.
Yeah, even though it's a dead-end tech and the wonders are gone, it'll still give you top dollar for that, no matter what point in the game. And I think even if it has the Espeo wonder to unlock the religious civics, even if the wonders for theocracy are gone, it'll still give you top dollar for that, even though it's pointless. So, basically, that was dead-on accurate right there.
I was looking down in the thread and noticed that the J and R Rollo added a couple options of their own for the poll. And the J, he said, no idea, depends heavily on other changes which are done. And R Rollo 1 said, it depends. If there is some kind of tech diffusion mechanism and the possibility of stealing techs, I'm okay with that. If not, I'm not so okay with that.
The stealing techs, yeah, that's not really tech trading. That's still tech acquisition, but I'm going to trade. I get everything and you get nothing.
It is an important feature, if a little bit neglected in Civ 4, though. And previously, well, it was less neglected in previous one, but still.
Good old diplomats and their tech acquisition abilities.
Or just capturing a city and being able to take a technology. Aww.
Yeah, just buy the city with your spy while you're at it. It's back to Civ 2.
Even better, buy the stack of doom with your units.
Yeah, there you go.
It would kind of make sense being able to get a tech out and taking over a city, because just take over a city, you walk in there and you see cars driving around and you're still using carriages, you're probably going to want to adopt those cars into your society.
They were overpowered in Civ 2, at least at first. I don't know if Civ 2 was patched to balance it, but it was pretty crazy what you could do with diplomats and spies initially.
I can't remember that far.
That's the same game where you could break any defensive pact you wanted. Well, AIs would get pissed off at you if you simply tried to contact them a lot. So if you contacted them like 10 times in a row, you could force any AI in the world to declare on you without doing anything else. So it's one of those...
I don't remember that.
It wasn't exactly polished.
I think, yes, I remember that.
Here's what's been making news in the Civ community.
Gerald started a topic all about cities, happiness, and gold in Civ 5. The official Civ 5 site has posted a bunch of new information articles. Now, in All About Cities, so far they've told us, with the exception of the monument, which has no prerequisites and you can build it at the start, you're going to need knowledge of specific technologies to construct a building. Bronze working before you can build a barracks. There's another thing in here about you have to have horses or ivory to construct a circus. So that's a happiness thing you'd build, but you need resources to build it. And you have to know the technology to build it. So you're not going to be able to spam the basic stuff early. Oh, and they do cost more gold to maintain.
Like Civ 3, yeah.
Yes, back to anywhere from 1 to 5 gold per turn, depending upon your difficulty level.
Uh-oh.
Well, Civ 4 didn't let you build much more than a barracks right at the start, so there you go. In fact, you couldn't build a monument unless you have mysticism.
This is true.
But they don't charge for buildings in Civ 4, although that is a deception for Civ 4 players, because people will then try to build buildings that are not wise compared to their alternatives.
Yes, because it still raises the city maintenance, even if there's not a flat-out obvious gold per turn cost.
Well, no, it doesn't, but what it does do is deny you the units you should have had, or the gold you should have had in building wealth, or maybe a better building, and many turns of a better building, or another worker. It can lose out a lot by building the wrong thing, and so forth. But you don't have the gold per turn charge.
It's interesting how, in addition to certain technologies needing to get before you can build certain buildings, that's nothing new with Civ 4, you actually need certain resources to build certain things, like Maggie mentioned the circus there, for instance.
Yeah, because all these luxury resources that we're just used to hooking up and then being instantly reducing our unhappiness, now we're going to have buildings for it. Like, even if we hooked up wine, there won't be any point without building wineries or something like that.
Hmm.
Because, I mean, yeah, in Civ 4 it was, oh yes, if I hook up this resource, then I can build this building faster, but I could still build it without it.
Civ 4 had the significant impact of having certain buildings receive extra bonuses based on resources you had, though. Market is a terrible deal if you don't have any of the resources, but if you have all four, then it's pretty effective as a happy cat boost. And that's also true for grocers with those resources, and much later in the game, the supermarkets as well.
Yeah, but now it's without the check and the appropriate building, no happiness for you.
Yeah, you can't build a building at all. And it might not be worth your money, depending.
And also unhappiness, it's saying here that when your happiness is negative and your happiness icon looks sad, population is unhappy. Well, okay, duh, but but the only ill effect is the growth rate is significantly slowed. It's not going to affect production or anything else.
The only ill effect, they say.
Yeah.
Well,
just your city growth, huh?
Yeah.
Just that.
Just city growth.
Direct effect. Direct, not domino effect. But that's if your population is very unhappy, your city stops growing altogether, you cannot build any settlements. Okay. And your military units get a nasty combat penalty.
That's going to be, yeah. Do not let your cities get really unhappy.
There's where your eyes bulge out of your head. I guess the other thing about cities is now citizens can work tiles that are 3 distance away from the city as opposed to 2. Now, one tile can still only be worked by one city, but I like this. The article says it's because of this that only one city can work a single tile. Because of this, it's important to carefully consider how closely together to build your cities. Well, that's true. I guess I kind of read that as, but that's not different as compared to Civ 4.
No, but if you found some sort of super food site, you might want to designate that to be a mega city with the whole 3 hexes all the way out.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that it kind of goes along to the point that with longer movement rate, of course, they're going to be spread apart. And I think it also gives way to a larger maps, too. Saw another thread about the maps. Somebody had posted that somebody put a picture in there that showed it looked like a pretty large map in the mini-map area, that probably greater than anything I've seen in Civ 4, and it looks pretty interesting because it had a lot of little dots all over the land.
We also know that there are 4 kinds of specialists, scientists, merchants, artists, and engineers that do as they do in Civ 4, what they're increasing in terms of output, as well as towards the creation of certain great people. I read that and I went, no citizen specialist? Well, no.
When would you ever use a citizen specialist? That's a fun thread to cover.
Yeah, I guess the thing that really struck me with regards to cities was that in addition to a city acquiring tiles based on culture, you can expend gold to purchase them.
Yeah, that had me wondering too. And there's a special trait too that makes it cheaper if you want to purchase tiles, I believe, as well. I'm just not sure how that actually works.
Yeah, it says the cost of each tile vary based on the variety of factors, such as how rough the terrain is and whether it's across a river. And I'm also sitting here thinking, is it also going to put a premium on good tiles? Maybe the rough mountains are cheaper because they don't have any extra minerals in them, but maybe a mountain tile with some sort of, like iron or something, is more expensive. Or a grassland on a river with a food resource is more expensive.
Just plant another city and share tiles. That's what people do in Civ 3 and Civ 4, right? There you go.
Phil's plan, build more cities, spam more units.
Yeah, that's not a bad plan.
depending how expensive it is to purchase a tile, that may not be a bad trait, but I'd have to see the game to actually know for sure. The only other trait I read that seemed interesting is for Japan, all damaged units fight as though they're at full health. I'm thinking that seems to me to be like a top tier right there.
Yeah, that's a scary concept.
So I really have to see how it actually works, but just reading that, I'm just thinking, wow, that seems Japan just went from like one of the really crappy leaders to one of the top leaders.
Maybe there's some distinction between being on the offensive and on the defensive, but still, yeah, that's up there.
That would be golden in Civ 4. It'd be so broken. It'd be hilarious until the AI used it on you.
I predict a spammy, flamey thread about this as soon as the game comes out.
If I understand right, so if an AI hits you, if you get hit by Siege and you're like down 1 hit point out of 10, you still get a fight like you have 10 hit points per unit. I mean, that would be awesome. Somehow I can't see it being that strong, but...
Well, no, because we don't have Civ 4 stat combat anymore.
And as near as can be told, when we talk about purchasing tiles with gold, that is tiles that are currently not in all somebody's culture already, which if you could purchase it from another Civ, I could see AI abuse.
Aww, I was going to purchase away their horses and iron and happy.
Unless they do it back with bonuses.
And it talks about, of course, how you can spend money as well as making money. You will get gold when citizens work coasts, ocean, rivers. When they work national wonders and oases, that's a concept actually from Civilization Revolution extended a little bit. So some particular geographic feature that's particular to that one tile on the map. To add to this list, but it was only posted on Civilization5.com a couple of days before this recording, different strategic resources in the game, which we've heard about before, like we know that, for instance, your one source of iron is not going to be able to give you all of the swordsman unit that you can chop and whip. You will have a limit in terms of how many that's going to support, and it has been suggested some numbers, but it'll probably scale, like based on map size, for instance. But the six types are horses, iron, coal, oil, aluminum, and uranium. Interestingly, from this article, when you construct an improvement on a strategic resource hex, it provides you with a limited number of those resources, and these are consumed when you construct the associated units or buildings. The article also says that limiting the quantity of units that each tile or resource can support creates many situations where civilizations will want to go to war over the resources. Well, I would say make you want to go to war more over the resources, but I am nitpicking.
Curious about the AI bonuses as you go up in the levels. I mean, would they actually be allowed to make more swordsmen from the same resource than a human would, or how would that work?
Yeah, I recall coming across anything that tells us one way or the other about that. Not a lot about difficulty levels, period, like what even the different difficulty levels are. Like, how many are there?
Because I'm thinking if they are just as restricted as a person is on how many swords from, like, an iron resource, that may really nerf them a lot. Because compared to right now where the AI can come at you with a stack of 300 units, where there's no way a human can compete with that. If they're under kind of the same limits, I don't know. Civ 5 may be much, much easier to beat unless they have a clever way to cheat somewhere else.
Well, I'm sure they can come up with something.
One thing that kind of goes along with the strategy or the strategic resources, I noticed they put up an update about worker improvements. And most of it is pretty much standard, you know, mines for gold and such. And it didn't give any specific what the bonuses would be, but the biggest thing that I did see, that roads are going to cost 1 gold maintenance per turn, and railroads are going to cost 2 gold maintenance per turn, which is pretty interesting. I'm assuming that's going to be per segment of road.
Yeah, per hex of road, yeah.
Seems more realistic.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll prevent that whole, like, spider web of road that you always get in the older Civs.
Yeah, they had that in Civ Rev, but it was more about you could only build roads from one city to another, but that was more of a streamlining thing. I'm glad that's not going to be in Civilization V. This maintenance thing, it's more realistic, and I don't think it really detracts from gameplay that much. It adds to the strategy, it adds to the tactics.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good addition.
Yeah, I like it.
Speaking of workers, Roman Legion units can actually build roads themselves.
Yay!
So it's not just, so now you got worker action not just limited to workers, at least in that one particular instance. I was like, ooh, hey.
Yeah, I think it was Civ 3 where it had the editor, you could add worker improvements to any unit. So I would often do that for my own games. I'd do that to the Roman legions because historically it made sense. That's what they did. Legions were a big part of the reason for all the roads and why we get the phrase, all roads lead to Rome.
We mentioned specialists before, the four different types. Well, in addition to the merchant scientist, engineer, and artist, there is also the great general.
I'm interested to learn more about the improvements that they build, that you can build with the great people. Like the Citadel, I think it is, and there are a couple of others that are shown. The landmark from the artist.
Yeah, like the great general, the Citadel you mentioned, defensive bonus to units.
Yeah.
The landmark improvement for great artists, giving extra culture when worked. Engineer, you can build the manufacturing improvement, give extra production when worked. And then there's the academy improvement for the scientist, of course. This gives +5 science. The custom house is actually an improvement by the great merchant as opposed to a separate building as it was in Sephora. That provides extra gold when worked.
Yeah, I think I kind of like or I'm intrigued by the fact that they're improvements and not buildings as they were in Sephora. They're actually map improvements.
Yeah.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Voice actor for Civilization V was revealed. It is not Spock. It is not Sid. It is not William Shatner. It is not Morgan Freeman. It's not your mama. It's, what's his name?
The mean piece.
It's a Morgan Shepherd.
Name may not ring a bell, but if you look at his IMDb profile, he's been in a bunch of Star Trek episodes and of the different series, and then even, I think, in the newer movie. You've seen him in stuff.
They must do this on purpose. I guess the population of the 4/5 fans and Star Trek has a significant overlap. I'm one of the ones that are not in the middle part of the Venn diagram, but, you know.
I'm going to be there like you people.
Awesome.
All right. This has been episode 99 of Polycast. I'm Maka Lua, and I was joined today, as usual, by Dan Quick.
Episode 99, and it was fine.
And me and team.
I need no resources for a circus.
Q&L.
Party like it's 1999. Watch out for Y2K.
Poly2K. And our guest today, Obsolete.
Adios.
And Thorburn.
Go Ravens.
Sal, this was your first return guest co-hosting experience. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being a lot, how much do you regret that decision?
Actually, I didn't hear what you said the scale went, so I'll just say 5.
The thingamabobber, yeah.
That's really descriptive. I know exactly what you're talking about based on what you just said.
We talk all about civilization.
There we go.
Oh my god.
We talked all about civilization.
I get another gold star. I'm up to 2 today.
Oh. Yeah, but now you're stealing gold stars. You're supposed to wait for them to be given to you.
I quote-unquote earned it, Dan. It's mine now. You can't take it back.
You're still only in Civ League and still... you're still only in...
I'm infecting everybody.
You're still only in the Silver League of podcasting.
Uh-huh.
Hey, that means there's some room for improvement. It's not all downhill from here. Hey, hey, hey. We're already ingrained into the series. There's no hope for us, but there's hope for the audience. No, actually, wait, they listen to the show. There's no hope for you.
What, I thought we attracted really casual gamers onto our Civ 4, Civ 5 strategy podcast.
They're casual when they start listening, but by the time they finish their first episode, they are not casual anymore. They're like hardcore.
Ah, there you go.
Good luck. Record date?
August 14th, 2010.
Civilization 4 Warlords and Beyond the Sword sound clips, copyright Take 2 Interactive.
Copyright 2009, Civilized Communication at civcom.net.